You are tuned in to the Empowerment Hour podcast, your digital global classroom where individuals across all ages, backgrounds, and career levels tune in for guidance and motivation to live life on their own terms. It's where inspiring thought leaders, modern-day influencers, and social game changers come to discuss their own personal journeys and have real conversations about the journey to success. I am your host, Nancy Ruffin, and every week I bring you raw and unfiltered conversations about the obstacles we all encounter, the times we felt like giving up, and the things that keep us forging forward. It's where passion and purpose intersect. So if you're ready to start living on purpose, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. What's up, what's up, what's up? It's your girl, Nancy Ruffin. Thank you guys for joining me for yet another episode of the Empowerment Hour podcast. We are nearing our 100th episode mark, you guys. And it's almost surreal to me that I have recorded 96 episodes. To think about what this podcast initially started off as and to see where we are to date, the growth has just been amazing. And really, it's a reminder to me, and let it also be a reminder to you, that as with anything, you're gonna go through a stage or a period of growth. You're not gonna start off being great or being perfect, and you may never reach that level of perfection, but eventually you do get better. And I'm just really proud of what we have been able to establish here at the Empowerment Hour podcast. We have 96 episodes of inspiration, of motivation, of individuals really coming on and laying it all out on the table, giving us, you know, their authentic selves, sharing with us their fears, their triumphs, their failures, their challenges, how they overcame challenges, their successes. I mean, it's just really been a phenomenal almost 2 years. And what we have been able to accomplish here has surpassed, I think, any hope that I initially had for the podcast. I mean, of course, now that I have been in it for a while, my dreams and vision for the podcast have increased and they're much, much bigger now. But when I initially started the podcast, I don't think I had a vision of what we would eventually grow to be. So just thank you all. Those of you who tune in every single week, you know, religiously, I appreciate your loyalty, your support, and you all really keep me motivated and inspired to really do this thing. And, you know, as I grow, as you guys help me grow, I'm able, you know, to do more, to provide better interviews, to create more content. And, you know, I'm really driven and motivated by the world around us and the things that are happening, you know, in the media, the things that affect us directly, whether that has to do with business, becoming an entrepreneur, family, motherhood, career, just everything. You know, we talk about it all here on the Empowerment Hour because really what our goal is to provide a platform where you can see yourself in either myself or the guest that I have on, and to be able to peel away from the conversations something, some resource, some tool that you can take back and in some way apply to your own lives. You know, and I've been following really closely, for those of you who have been in the media and following the media like I have, you know that Bill Cosby recently got sentenced, you know, for all of the sexual allegations and misconduct that he had been committing for years, decades even, you know. And there has been a lot of discussion on social media, in the news, within our communities about his age, about the fact that he's ill and that he's, you know, he's elderly, and whether or not he should really go to jail and serve his time, you know. But the bottom line is, and I am very clear on my stance on this, anyone who commits any kind of crime, especially a sexual one where the rights of another individual have been violated, they have to serve their time. And a jury found him to be guilty for the crimes that he was charged with. And it just goes to show that no matter how many years pass, the things that you do in this life come back to you. You have to atone for the things that you do. You have to pay. You have to pay the price, you know, for the misconduct that you do in your youth. So the fact that he's old now, right, when he got caught and when he got convicted, for me is irrelevant. You know, what he stole from these women that he attacked or raped or took advantage of, this is something that they all have to live with for the rest of their lives. No one knows how their lives have been affected, have been destroyed as a result of his actions. And so he absolutely should pay. And so for those out there who want to feel pity for him or feel bad for him, I need you to redirect those feelings to his victims and to those who have survived in spite of what he did to him. And, you know, when I think about how women on a whole, in a general level, become almost immune to certain behavior from men, right? We become kind of accustomed to it. And so at times we don't even realize when we're being harassed or when we're being violated or when someone is taking advantage of us, because we have been taught to that boys will be boys, to not make a big deal out of things, right? We don't want to seem like the women that's constantly complaining or making a big deal out of things. But we learn to accept this behavior even though it's not right and it's inappropriate. And as I was thinking about tonight's show and about what I wanted to talk about, I was trying to think about the many times in my own life that I have been harassed. And I think back to this time, I think I might have been 18, 19. I had to be around 18, 19 because it was before I met my husband. And I met my husband when I was, I think, 20. So I remember meeting, you know, this, back then I used to party a lot. Me and my girlfriends were always in the clubs. And so my girlfriend had ended up meeting some guy in a club who she started dating. And he had a friend or friends or whatever. And so at that time, we would do a lot of double dates. So I ended up meeting a friend of the guy that my girlfriend was dating. Now, I was not attracted to this guy. He, for me, in my eyes, he was just a friend. In hindsight, I probably may have led him to believe that there was an opportunity for us to date. Who knows? I was very flirtatious back in the day. And we used to hang out. And so I remember this one night, he came to pick me up at my house. We went to hang out. We might have went and had dinner or something. And he took me back to a house in Yonkers where he lived. I don't remember if it was his house. I don't remember if it was a friend's house. I don't remember whose house it was, but we went back to somebody's house and we were kind of hanging out. And I remember we were, I don't know if it was a room or it was the basement. In any case, he locked me in a room. And he was like, well, I'm not going to let you out of this room until you give me a kiss. And I remember just laughing it off because I thought he was joking and he was very playful, but he was dead ass serious. Like, he was not opening that door until I gave him a kiss, and I didn't want to kiss him. I was not attracted to him in that way, and I don't know if I led him on, if I misled him, if he read the wrong signs from my body language. I don't remember, but I remember clearly I did not want to kiss him. I wasn't attracted to him. I didn't like him in that way. I thought he was cool, you know, as a guy. We were kicking, we were talking on the phone, but I did not want to kiss him. And I kept on trying to avoid him, and I kept on trying to coerce him to open the door, to take me home. And eventually he did. And I don't remember if I kissed him to get out of the room, but I remember really vividly that that was the ultimatum that he had given me. And when I think back on that time, I mean, he wasn't someone who I had known for very long. That whole incident could have turned into something totally, totally different. Thank God that it didn't. I wasn't physically violated. He didn't really force himself on me. But here I am, still making excuses, right, for the fact that he gave me that ultimatum, either, you know, to kiss him and if I wanted my freedom from that room. But I think about that, and I think about the many times that we as women are put in these uncomfortable situations and for our own safety have to compromise what we may or may not want to do in those moments, you know. And so I'm really lucky that I have never been violated in that way. Not to say that I haven't been violated in other ways, though. I mean, sexual harassment in the workplace is a big, big deal. And I think this is also something that we tend to just deal with, right? We kind of brush it off. We don't really try to make that big of a deal about it. But I remember when I first started my career in healthcare and I was working in a hospital, and you're exposed to so many different people in a hospital. You have patients, you have the employees, you have like the maintenance workers. I mean, everyone used to hit on me, and I just really ignored it. And even to this day in my current workplace, there's this one man who in his mind, I know, believes he's giving me a compliment. But it's not the things that he says to me as much as it is the way that he says it. It's just, it makes me feel uncomfortable, but I kind of brush it off to the side and I make excuses for him because for the most part, he's an older man. He's a nice man. I don't really have problems with him. But not to say that at times it doesn't make me uncomfortable. But yeah, as women, we compromise how we feel because we don't want to make a big deal. We don't want to cause a problem. We don't want to cause a scene. And ironically, my guest tonight is someone who was really a voice for what we now have termed as the Me Too movement, the Time's Up movement, you know, all of these movements that are really centered on women speaking up and holding men accountable for the times that they have violated them. And for me, she is someone, she's like a journalistic icon. She's a hip hop culture icon. She was, and I think still is, the only female editor of The Source magazine. And if you grew up in the hip-hop culture like I did in the 90s, you were reading The Source. You were buying that Source magazine to find out what was the hottest albums coming out, to read all of the juiciness that kind of centered on whatever beefs, right, were happening during that time. You know, she was it, okay? She really took that magazine, I think, to another level and really made it become, in itself, this cultural icon. I mean, The Source was like the hip-hop Bible. In fact, that's what they have dubbed it, right? The hip-hop Bible. You know, so it was really an honor for me to have Kim Osorio, who was the editor at the time of The Source, on tonight's episode, because, again, as I was saying, she was one of the first faces of sexual harassment in the workplace, you know, and she filed a lawsuit against The Source magazine, against her employers, against its founders, because of the uncomfortable work environment that she was forced to work in as a female in a very misogynistic industry. And even to this day, we know that hip-hop doesn't treat its ladies, you know, well. I think that it has made strides from where it was, but it still has a ways to go. And Kim, really, for me, was the first face of that. And you'll see throughout our conversation, you know, where she says, you know, she accepts the Me Too movement, but she really feels like she was the pioneer. So she says, me first. And for me, she really was kind of the first within our culture to speak up against it. And it's not, that's not an easy thing to do when you're at the top of your game, when you're the editor of one of the biggest hip hop magazines, you know. So we talk a little bit, well, we talk a lot about that, but then we also talk a lot about how she was able to survive that and still have a very successful career in hip hop, in entertainment, you know, in the industry after The Source magazine, you know. And so right now she has transitioned into reality TV. But I'm not going to give too much. I am going to let you guys listen to the interview and then share your feedback after you listen to our conversation. I would love to hear your thoughts on it. I would love to hear your thoughts on this whole Bill Cosby thing, even the Brett Kavanaugh stuff that's happening. And I will talk about that on another episode because I believe that that just is, there's a lot to kind of dive into there. But yeah, let me know what you think of this night of tonight's episode. Shoot me a DM, email me, leave us a rating, a review, and just really share your thoughts. And if you love my interview with Kim, make sure you also connect with her on her Instagram. She gives her handle at the end of the conversation. She's doing some really great things. And for me, it's always wonderful to see women's career, to see the longevity of her career, the fact that she has been able to sustain such a long career in entertainment is just absolutely amazing. So without further ado, here is my interview with the one and only Kim Osorio. Hey guys, well, welcome back to another episode of the Empowerment Hour podcast. It's your girl, Nancy Ruffin, and joining me tonight, I have someone whose work I've admired and respected for years. To me, she is a hip-hop culture icon. She is someone who, when I look at her career, you know, has really paved the way for many of us, particularly women in an industry that has historically just used us as visual aids and not respected us for our minds and for, you know, and for the many ways that we, you know, contribute, you know, into the world, and specifically in hip hop. You know, she was the first female hip hop editor of The Source. She also wrote her book Straight from The Source, with pretty much detailed everything that was happening in her life during one of the most pivotal times in hip hop. She has also served as the executive editor at BET.com. She's been an on-air correspondent for BET News and the Black Carpet. She's also served as VP of content at Russell Simmons Global Grind website. She's also made a reality TV appearance in The Gossip Game, which we know aired a few years ago. You know, and so without any further ado, please join me in welcoming someone who I absolutely love, Kim Osorio. Hey, Kim.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for being on. It's an absolute honor to be even speaking and chatting with you. And I really just want, you know, just to kind of catch up with you, what you've been doing, you know, all of these years, even though, you know, we haven't really seen you out in the forefront. I know that you've been busy behind the scenes,
So I guess to kind of get started, just catch us up on what you've, a little bit of what you've been doing or what you've been working on.
Well, I'll catch you up on, you know, it's been a heck of a couple of years for me. So after I did the Gossip Game, I transitioned fully into television production. So I started mostly as a writer. I did a lot of host scripts. I used to write scripts when I was at BET. And I kind of got my foot in the door in reality in that way after I did the show. And since then, I've gone on to produce four shows like Love and Hip Hop, Hustle and Soul. I did the first season. The new show that's coming on BET, which is called The Hustle in Brooklyn, that'll premiere October 23rd on BET at 10 p.m. And I'm working right now with Big Fish Entertainment, who I worked with before on Black Ink Chicago. So I am fully entrenched in that world now. So even though it's not like print magazines or online journalism, I still get to use my creative sense by, you know, and my writing experience, you know, like I'm always going to be a storyteller at heart. So that's what got me into, you know, writing for The Source, because I love to tell stories and I love hip hop stories, and it's what keeps me going today.
You know, it's interesting because I know that you have a law degree from NYU. And so I always wondered, how does one who studied law transition into like journalism, into this career in entertainment that you managed to establish for yourself? Was it something you kind of fell into, or was it something you always knew?
My law degree is from New York Law School, which is different from NYU. It's down there on Wirt Street.
Ah, okay.
A lot of people get the schools confused, but I did fall into it. I'm going to say I did fall into it because even though it was my passion, to write, I never thought it would take me so far in my career. And so the reason why I didn't go straight into the law after law school was because I got the job at The Source a couple of months after I graduated, and literally like I've been going ever since. So I never fully said like, or took time off and said, all right, it's time for me to transition back into law, because I was doing what I love to do.
You know, that is almost like, I mean, for me, it's almost like a Cinderella story, because I think a lot of us, when, you know, we go to school, when we think about passion projects or things that we love, like writing, right? Like the creative arts. Mm-hmm. It's not something that when we think about that, we'd be like, wow, we can make a lot of money as writers, right? We always kind of go to school to get into a profession where we think we're going to live comfortably, or where we can at least create a life for ourselves that's sustainable. And so for you to get the degree, but then immediately after, you know, college, get hired into what you say is your, you know, what you love and your passion, I think that's what most of us kind of wish or dream. And here you are, you're someone who's been in this industry for over 20 years, whether it's been in print magazines or on reality TV or the many other hats that you've worn. How have you managed to reinvent yourself and stay relevant in an industry that's always changing? Even with like hip hop now, it's so different from when you initially started.
Yeah, I mean, it's very different. And the career that I had, I don't even really feel like exists in the same way today. You know, it's all about branding yourself and not being attached to a brand. And early in my career, I was attached to a very powerful brand. So I think the constant reinvention in this industry is to continue to build yourself as a brand. And that's a lesson that I've learned since even being at The Source. So, you know, I have a certain skill set. And as long as I'm using that skill set, I'm happy in whatever or for whatever platform I'm doing it for. It just happens to be television right now.
So, you know, I want to talk a little bit, because I think as a woman who really... You left footprints, you know, in the work that you were doing, because at the time that you started in hip hop, I think, and even still, I think it's still a very misogynistic culture. You know, women are sexualized and exploited. So I guess for you, when you were coming up in that kind of environment and considering the issues that you had, you know, at the source, you know, with your bosses and with the founders, mm-hmm. what would you say has been one of your greatest challenges, you know, throughout your career up until this point? And how have you been able to overcome that?
I would say that the biggest challenge or one of the greatest challenges in my career was definitely the lawsuit. It was tough at the time. And I think in this day and age with movements like Me Too, you know, I can look back on it and be proud, right? And say that I did something first. I always say me first, right?
Yes, you know, yes, absolutely.
I definitely wasn't the first to do it, but I like the hashtag of that. I like the way that sounds. But you know, like, yeah, I feel like this movement today validates what I did, but I don't think that it was celebrated in the way that it is celebrated today, right? So women are commended for standing up and speaking out for themselves. And I feel when I filed the lawsuit, it wasn't a good time, right? So the support and just, it was more frowned upon than anything, you know,
right.
Like I wasn't going to be able, you know, to get a job after that. I wasn't going to be able to just continue on my career path because it would tarnish the legacy. So I think overcoming that and being able to go through the trial and sort of stand with my head held high and then be able to write about it later in the book is really what helped me to overcome that situation. I mean, like I said earlier, writing is my passion. So being able to write about something, even after I went through the lawsuit, people were like, oh, why did you write a book? And I was like, it was therapy for me. It's what I do today. Like whatever I go through in life, like I write about it or I relate it to what I'm working on. And that's, you know, that's, like I said, it's what I do every day right now.
You so. Know, I actually consider you as the first face or voice for this kind of movement, because it was the first time I think that we saw on a very public level or public scale a woman speaking up against what was happening to her. And I think, you know, as women, it's something that we deal with every single day, right? We deal with it as we walk down the street. We have to deal with the catcalls and right. with comments that men make, you know, in the workplace. It's nothing new. But I think that for me anyway, you were the first face of this movement. But I think that what you said about it wasn't the right time, I think you're right. You're spot on, because there's, you know, like timing is everything. And mm-hmm. I think considering our political climate, considering, you know, who the president of this country is, I think all of that kind of plays into the visibility now of this movement of women just really being tired of not being respected or not being valued, right. especially when it comes, you know, to the workplace. We don't receive equal pay. There's just like so many things that kind of fall under that umbrella. And for a woman like yourself, you've held several leadership positions, you know, throughout your career. How have you been able to navigate being a woman in power in an industry that we know has been historically misogynistic?
It's hard, you know. It's so funny because I think that I have a sensitivity to that, and I often find myself you know, trying to look at a situation and not overthink it in that way because of my own personal experiences. But it's something that I can't help. So, you know, I just go about my day and know that that's who I am, and I'm not afraid to talk about it or confront a situation. I had a situation recently where I felt, you know, and it was natural. I did not feel disrespected, but I didn't feel like my power was respected in the way that a man's power was being respected. And sometimes you just got to take a step back. Sometimes it's not like done maliciously by people. It's right. just how the world is. And I've been able to, you know, with just growing up as, you know, in my maturity level with my experience, I've been able to manage it better. But I do make it my business to bring it to people's attention, right? So I'm comfortable enough in my career and in my experience to be able to have those conversations with people, be it women or men, about just kind of the gender disparities that we face every day in not just this entertainment industry, but in every industry.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to shift gears a little bit because I don't want the whole time that we're talking to be about just one moment in your life. Yeah. Right. But I think that it was important to kind of address it because it was a defining moment, I think, in your life. And it really kind of set the tone on how you proceeded in your career after that. But you're also a wife and a mother. How do you juggle having a career in the entertainment industry with having a family and the various responsibilities that come with being a mom and a wife?
Well, I'm an ex-wife now.
So it's a little
different. And that even in and of itself, going from married woman to single woman is a new challenge for me, you know, just kind of growing up and in my life and trying to deal with it in my career as well. But it's always been hard to juggle your personal life, your family life, especially as a mother, especially when you have kids, with any career from what I know, particularly, you know, with entertainment, right? Because you got to do things, you got to fly back and forth, you got to stay networking, you got to stay out in the, you know, on the scene and make sure people see you. And that's hard to do when you have kids. And sometimes it's okay to take a step back and to be like, you know what? Maybe my career is not the priority in my life right now. And I've had to do that. I've had to take a step back. I've had to not maybe go as hard as I wanted to go in certain situations because my kid is sick or something like that. You know, like you wake up in the morning and you go to work, but when you have kids, you wake up in the morning and your son has to stay home from school and you can't go. So, you know, or you have to figure it out. You have to figure out a way to get to work so that your kids are taken care of because they become the priority. So I think that as women, that's just the sacrifice that we make when we decide to have kids. And unfortunately, everybody is not as welcoming to those situations. But sometimes there are people that understand family and will work with you. And I like to say that a lot of women I know who have families and who have responsibilities work even harder because they're working to prove something, you know. And I know that I take that into my career. Like, I feel like I'm always trying to prove that you can have a family and have a life and balance work, you know, and have a good work-life balance.
Yeah. And I mean, and I think, and you have a daughter, yes?
I have two.
So you have two. So I think that even, that it's even more important when you have, you know, daughters because they look to their mothers, right, as the role models, you know, where they take their cues from on what they can or cannot do. So I think the fact that you're very conscious of that is important because you're raising the next generation of female leaders, right? And we always want our children to like be more and do more. And considering that you've done so much, I can't even imagine what your kids are going to grow up, you know, to do and to be like. But I guess, shifting now away from the personal, talk to us a little bit about this new project that you're working on, Hustle in Brooklyn. Tell us a little bit about the show. What can we expect to see when it airs October 23rd?
Right. So I'm actually not working on it anymore because we wrapped. So I'm working on Black Ink Chicago now. The Hustle in Brooklyn is a show about, you know, I would say eight main, there's some other cast members, so there may be more cast than that. But millennials trying to make their way in the industry in that area in Brooklyn. And expect to see their hustle, expect to see the relationships that you have with, you know, people coming up and how those relationships affect your business. And, you know, it's a very young cast. But it's a really, I'm very proud of that show. So I'm looking forward to the debut and seeing it and see how it's received amongst this community. Because I think it's the first time that BET has done a reality show in a long time. And it's formatted a little differently in that there are no interviews. So there are no green screen interviews. It's just straight what we call verite, which is scene work. So we're excited about that one.
Interesting. I look forward to seeing it. If you have one piece of advice for those millennials or for anyone who is following their dreams, what would it be?
I would say my advice would be to follow your dreams. I think we often get sidetracked, you know, just because you got to pay bills, right? So you yes. think that you can't live your dreams. But I think it's all about balance and juggling things and commitment. I know a lot of people are just afraid of commitment overall, you know, but you have to commit to something in order to see it through. And I think if you do that, that you'll reap the benefits.
Absolutely. Well, Kim, I don't want to keep you any longer because I know how busy you are, but thank you so much for joining us tonight on the Empowerment Hour. I look forward to following your career journey and to seeing all of the amazing work that you are working on behind the scenes. And hopefully I can
thank
have you,
Nancy.
Back once Black in Chicago finishes wrapping and we can talk a little bit about that
yeah,
show.
For sure. It's going down right now. Like literally I'm in the thick of production for Black in Chicago. So, and you know that show, so it's exciting.
So before you go, how can, you know, our listeners kind of catch up with you? Do you have a website? What's your Instagram? Like, how can they follow your work and what you're doing?
I think the Instagram is probably the best thing because it's the most updated for me right now. When I think about my website, I have a website at kimosorio.com, but I can't even remember the last time that I updated it.
Okay.
So yeah, I would say check my Instagram. It's at Kim Osorio1, KIMOSORIO, the number one. And you know, that's like the easiest way to get at me.
Perfect. So just check for Kim, keep an eye out for her. She's definitely out there working. And Kim, thanks again. Have an amazing evening and continued success to you and everything that you're working on.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right, Nancy. Bye-bye.
So that wraps up this week's episode of the Empowerment Hour podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Make sure that you head on over to Apple Podcasts if you're not already listening there. Subscribe, leave us a rating, share us with your friends, and tell the entire world why they need to tune in to the Empowerment Hour podcast with your girl, Nancy Ruffin. Until next time, mi gente, as I do every week, I want to remind you to be kind to yourself, to be kind to others, and go out there and crush those goals.